gentlemen, podcasting since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1231. This is your host, Danny Pena, and once again, we have the whole Gamertag Radio crew up in here, and starting with the one and only, not Paris, but Pete. What's going on, Pete?
What's up, man? What's up from 9 hours in the future? What's up?
What's up, man? How's everything, man?
Doing good. It was good playing Call of Duty with you and Rihanna and Fist Pump last night. That was pretty fun.
Fun game. Still buggy.
Yep.
But fun game.
Yep.
Fun game. And also joining us, Paris. What's up, Paris?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good. Everything is good, man. Here, I had no idea that the time change. I woke up and I went to make some, you know, coffee. And I'm like, why the microwave? The time is so different. What the hell's going on? So it said it was like 8 something already. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on a second. So, and then you reminded me. So thank you for the reminder, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay. What's wrong with you today? All right, everyone. Shout out to everyone that's watching here and also listening to Gamertag Radio. Today, we have a couple of things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the controversy that everybody's been talking about for like the past couple of days about Twitter. Shout out to our friends over there. And also, God of War. Paris, God of War Ragnarok. We've been playing that for a while. We're going to talk about that too.
Best game of 2022.
Relax. I haven't finished, sir. We haven't finished. Relax. Save that for the show. What's wrong with you? All right. Also, I have an unreleased interview that I'm going to share later that this was recorded a couple of weeks back at my previous job. And it's with the composer of Starfield, Inon Zur. And this came out. I mean, it hasn't been released at all, but I'm going to release it for the first time here exclusively on GTR. So stay tuned. All right. So, for those who are listening, make sure to head over to GamertagRadio.com. Listen to our past episodes. You could also find us on any podcast app. Just search for Gamertag Radio. Search, follow us, and subscribe. Either way. And that's about it. Now, if you have questions or you have angry emails you would like to send to Paris or to Pete, not to me, but only to them, this is how you could contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Pete, the reason is because I always get nice emails. You guys get angry emails. So I just want that directly to you guys.
I don't get emails, period. I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's all good. But not everybody, make sure to send us a voicemail or messages, email, and I'll definitely will play here in the podcast. All right. So let's talk about the controversy, man. I know.
Why aren't we talking about God of War?
I'm the captain now. I'm the captain. So I decided to talk about Twitter.
God of War is game of the year. There you go.
Relax. Relax, Paris. So we're going to talk about Twitter. Now the new owner, Elon Musk, already took over the company a couple of days ago. And the reason why I want to talk about this is because I was listening to a great Twitter Spaces. I know Paris was part of it. Khalif Adams from
Spawn. It was my Twitter Spaces. Why don't you give me credit for what I started?
Oh, it was yours? I thought it was Khalif.
It was me.
It said you were a co-host and you were far away and Ka was first. So Ka was the owner. That's his Spaces, not yours.
He did it after. He opened his own afterwards.
No, being serious for a second. No, I did start the space, and then I had some technical difficulties, so I had to drop out, and then I came back, so that's why Kyle was host.
Oh, okay. Mm. All right. Well, fix it, Elon Musk. So yeah, the great conversation. I know the tweets I've been reading all week is it going to be the end of Twitter? Is it going to be the end of this and that? A lot of creators are very worried, especially from the gaming community. And I'm in the wait and see approach. I know it's been chaotic and there's a lot of really bad decisions I've been making lately. And I feel like it's just been rushing with a lot of changes, right? Especially with the features. Also seeing a lot of people got laid off from the company. I think 50%.
And now asking some of them to come back.
That's the other, which is wild to me. But I just want to have a conversation about this because, look, believe it or not, we've been using Twitter. I've been using Twitter and I and also the guys since the beginning, since like the first few, I think like a month or two after it got launched, we joined and I met a lot of people there. I met my wife through Twitter, you know. We be getting a lot of opportunities through Twitter, especially the Phil Spencer interview. That was because of Twitter, you know. A lot of opportunities. Even Paris with his hosting gig.
Don't talk for me, please.
It is true. Because you posted on Twitter. You manifested it, it happened. You know what I'm saying? So is it the end of Twitter? I don't see that. I know people are going to have different opinions about this, you know. But I just want to start the conversation from there. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, both of you. So who would like to go first? Because
I'd like to hear what Pete has to say, but I do want to interject with this one thing just to say, like, sure. To your point about being on Twitter kind of since the beginning, same with me. Ironically enough, it was Major Nelson's podcast. Major Nelson was talking about Twitter on his podcast. I guess that was 07. And that's what got me to sign up on Twitter. So that's just how long I've been on the platform. And you're right. Yeah. I do owe a lot to that platform of a lot of people that I've met around the world and opportunities and things. But I'll save some of that because I'm more curious to hear what Pete has to say.
Sure, sure. Yeah, very quick. I know you said Major Nelson. For me was GamerScore. GamerScore blog. Like,
Jesus Christ, am I ever gonna get to say anything?
Can I say, look, GamerScore blog for me. Bye, Pete. Take care. It was a great episode. For me, honestly, was because of GamerScore blog. I just want to say that. But go ahead, Pete. Go ahead.
You sure? Last chance?
Nah, go ahead. So are you.
I mean, I'm going to echo what Paris said. I mean, Twitter has been very, very instrumental in a lot of the things that all of us on the show have been privy to and still currently are. Obviously, the two of you, I don't even know how to say it, your presence. Thank you, wife. Your presence has grown, especially over the last 2 or 3 years. And a lot of that is due to Twitter. That said, a certain billionaire has decided to attempt to use the same business practices from Tesla and use it on his newly acquired organization. And it's not the same thing. And it's highlighting a lot of the same problems that he had over there and now manifesting them up on Twitter. Is it a shame? Absolutely. It hurts to a sense to see how the decisions of a poorly, I want to say educated, but just poorly thought out plan has resulted in essentially the almost like an abandoned ship mentality to probably the best social media platform on the world. I mean, a lot of, you know, there has been other, you know, platforms that have come and gone over the last few years, always trying to take the mantle, but Twitter has always remained the top one. And it sucks. You know, we've met a lot of people in the industry that have become not just colleagues, but friends, lifelong, you know, partners. But, you know, it sucks. It doesn't impact me as much as it does the two of you. I know we're all three level here at Gamertag Radio, but for the most part, think, you know, everybody sees the two of you as like the two big faces of GTR, and it sucks just to being a friend slash brother to the two of you. It sucks to see the impact and how it's gonna, you know, how it's gonna, you know, impact the two of you. How long this happens, I don't know. If maybe Jack has any way of coming in to save the day, he didn't really have all the answers before, but at least we knew what it was, and there was opportunities there, right? Now you see the, you know, the safety and brand and all of those key essential components of the business part of it having been essentially fired around the world, irrespective of individual, you know, country employment laws that are like, I think Scotland or Ireland is one of them, where you're not allowed to fire someone without a 60-day ruling or a 60-day notice. And now he could potentially be sued for that. And there's impacts globally. And to see how, and it's not just you guys, right? You know, all, you know, people in the industry, people that are just have gone from one day to the next, lost their jobs over the poor thought process of a billionaire. It's baffling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you had great points overall and everything that you're saying. I mean, this goes way beyond, obviously this is a video game podcast, but this has real world implications. One of the things that I was talking about during the spaces is the rush to do what he's doing as far as changing certain things. And, you know, we've even talked about this privately. I understand. Look, the truth of the matter is Twitter has been a poorly managed company for a long time. We know that. So I do understand him coming in and basically trimming the fat, you know, making the company more agile, looking at, you know, where they're basically overstaffed. So I understood that there were going to be some workforce reduction. You know, you want to be able to for the company to be self-sustaining as far as generating revenue, things like that. So I understand him wanting to come in and make changes. This always happens when you see an acquisition, especially of this size and scope. But it was the rush to that. It was a hurry up and let me make a huge splash versus let me come in, see where we need to make strategic changes. Not to mention, there's an election happening here in the United States this week, and some of these changes are going to be very significant when it comes to that, as far as disinformation goes and being able to moderate the platform properly. You know, I jokingly talked about me having issues with when I was trying to do the spaces. That's real, because that's what's going to happen, where we see a lot of, you know, reduction in workforce in certain parts of that business. You know, me coming from an InfoSec background, you know, seeing that, you know, they've had a huge reduction in their security staff is very troubling, especially with the current climate of the world that we're in right now. So, you know, forget the game part of it for a second. That's, to me, that's the biggest concern right now, is this platform has significant influence, you know, in our daily discussions as human beings. To make these rash decisions is a little troubling. So to swing this back to a more personal standpoint, you know, from a content creation standpoint, yes, I am part of the blue check mark people or whatever. I have been, God, when did I get it? Like 2016 or something like that. I've been for a while. I understand that this platform has definitely helped me in my content creation and given me a voice and given me exposure to a lot of people across this industry and beyond for a lot of the opportunities that I had. To Danny's point, yeah, I literally tweeted about me wanting to be able to host a major event, and that was the signal that went out that got me that opportunity that was told to me directly, which was crazy. You know, and other things that, you know, opportunities that myself, I've had, Danny's had, you know, Gamertag Radio as a whole. But here's how I'm personally looking at what's happening here with this Twitter blue, and now everyone being able to get a blue check mark. Basically, if everyone has one, no one has one is the way that I look at it. And I understand that it has evolved somewhat into a status symbol. I get it, because I see the angry tweets that come at me for saying anything around it, like literally, oh, you're a blue check mark, I can't trust you, or blah, 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 blah. I get all that, and that's fine. But the whole point of the blue check mark was to verify your identity. And I don't care if everyone has one. My thing isn't even that we have to pay for it. It's you're devaluing it because now it's not even about a verification process. If everyone that had to spend $8 a month, they had to go through verifying who they are, the whole ID, all that. Honestly, I wouldn't have an issue with it because I look at things that he's promising on the back end that make sense. And just full disclosure, I currently am able to take advantage of the back end of Twitter as far as posting extended videos and monetizing them. And I have monetized them in the past. And, you know, obviously as a content creator, yeah, I am taking advantage of that. So I do see value in what he's talking about on the surface, but the way he's gone about it and the rush to get this out, and it's out right now as we speak, but it's not even working the way that it's intended to work, and it's not available globally. I get that myself already being verified, I basically have 90 days to quote unquote comply, you know, if I want to do it. I will be fully honest with you right now, I'm leaning towards I am not going to pay. But let's see where we are in January, February, whenever the day of reckoning winds up coming. Maybe I change my mind. Right now, I feel like I'm not because I don't know what the value of it's going to be. He's promised, you know, being able to pay content creators. I've seen him talk about things of having video 1080p video up to 42 minutes or beyond, things like that. Obviously, with Twitter Blue, I can edit my tweets, things like that. I get all that. I almost feel like separate the blue check mark from the advantages of Twitter Blue. And obviously the algorithm, your tweets show up more. I don't need a check mark to be able to take advantage from a content creation standpoint of those things. Just eliminate it altogether because you've devalued what any of what it was supposed to be in the first place. As far as verifying identity, that was the whole point of it. So if that's no longer what it's about, instead, you've turned it into you're basically weaponizing the blue check mark to just make people even more upset on the platform. Because guess what's going to happen now? If I were to opt into Twitter Blue and have it, now people are going to mock it. And people are going to say you're paying for status and all these silly things. I've already seen people that are not understanding that people are already verified, don't have to pay, thinking that people have paid for it now and saying you should block anyone that has a blue check mark, stuff like that. You're turning your audience against themselves, right? Again, Twitter, the thing about Twitter is the customer of Twitter are supposed to be the advertisers, not us. It's not it. We are the product. We are who advertisers are trying to reach, so to speak, right? And again, the whole checkmark thing was about, you know, celebrities and political figures and journalists and things like that. So they're easily identifiable, you know, to know that the information they're providing you are legit. We've already seen imposter accounts of Elon Musk that are verified people because they're mocking the system and what it's going to potentially become. I'm not a doom and gloomer, but I'm not seeing the vision of what he's trying to do with the platform yet. I will reserve the right to say that I want to be proven wrong. I'm just not seeing it right now, but we'll obviously see in the upcoming months and weeks. I just think he's rushed to try and quote unquote prove a point. And ultimately right now it feels like that point is going to backfire. I hope it doesn't. I obviously like this platform. I don't want to go anywhere. I do not see an alternative. I don't see an alternative that'll have the impact that Twitter has. It's not going to be Instagram. It's not going to be Facebook. It's not going to be us retreating to our Discord servers. It's not going to be Mastodon or whatever it is. There's the pie in the sky with blue sky, you know, no pun intended, of what that potentially could be. But it's not a reality yet. So we don't know what it is. And like I was even saying in the spaces, I don't know if I have the energy to try and basically rebuild my presence somewhere else. I don't know if I even want to, you know what I mean? So I'll be on Twitter until it freaking goes up in flames, I guess. But as far as me being verified on it and potentially taking advantage of Twitter Blue, I don't know if I will just yet. That's kind of where I am.
Yeah, for me, I think I'm leaning towards I am probably going to pay. I see that.
But let me ask you this question. Before you continue.
Whoa.
I'm respectfully saying, let me ask you a question before you continue.
Okay. Sure.
So you're saying you're leaning towards doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I will fully admit part of my issue with not doing it is I feel like I'm encouraging a bad precedent.
But this is I was gonna say that I'm leaning towards it, but it's a wait and see situation because, you know, I've taken advantage of features on LinkedIn where you also will pay a certain amount. I think it's like $30-something a month. And I've done that because this is during the time that I was unemployed and I was trying to look for a job. And there were certain features that will allow me to, you know, communicate with companies and HR and all that stuff. So I did that, right? So that part, I don't have an issue. Like if it's something that's going to help my career, then I will pay it. Now, the thing with Twitter is it's been helping me so much on opportunities and a lot of stuff through there, right? I like where they're going, where they're like the plan, where they're talking about, but it looks like it's chaotic, it's unorganized, it's not 100% where they've been talking about. And I'm waiting to like sometime early next year to see if it's going to change. Cause right now he's rushing it and I feel like he's trying to prove a point and it's not looking good at all. But I feel like later on in a couple months, once they have new leadership and everything else, then the conversation is like, look, this is not going to work. This is going to work. And that's where I'm going to decide what I'm going to do. But so far I'm leaning towards it because I could see how this is going to not only help me, but help others in the future if they do it the right way. But I'm not in a rush to sign up right now because, like you said, Pirate, we still have, at least 90 days at least, you know? So sometime around January, February around there is when I could make my final decision if I'm going to do it or not, you know? Because let's keep it real, man. Like, same things that you have, Paris, with, you know, having ads through your video content, opportunities where I've been getting a lot of, you know, contacts, not only through that, but also through email for opportunities, not only to review games, but do interviews, et cetera, you know. So I want to still continue doing that just in case, you know what I'm saying? Because I don't have the energy to start all over again from a brand new social media. I just can't see myself. I know in the past we tried to do that with other things and it just died down. That was one that came out years ago. I forgot the name of it. Another social media company that came out and people were hyping it up, talking about it, and it's not even around. It didn't even last that long, not even a year. You know what I'm saying? So is this going to be the end of Twitter? I don't see it as going to be the end right now. It's like a really bad bump right now. And I think it's going to get, hopefully, better in the future. You know what I'm saying? So it's the similar thing that happened with Facebook. A lot of people were saying, oh, this is going to be the end of Facebook. And Facebook is still going at it right now, like still up and running. You know, Instagram is still up and running. Again, it's a wait and see approach for me, but I'm leaning towards doing it. So we'll see. Now, before we wrap it up, what has been like good things? Because I feel like we talked a lot about the negative, but what has been like the positive things that Twitter has helped you since joining back in the days for you guys?
Well, it was like we said already, it's just I literally know people across the entire world because of Twitter. Just the people that I've been able to meet through that app and just the real world friendships that have been built from it. I mean, you know, we've obviously talked about, you know, the career aspect of it, like opportunities that have come as well. But the most important thing is just the people that I've met through this app and, you know, establish these relationships and the back and forth that we've had communication wise. And I mean, obviously, even during the pandemic, I think that even emphasized it even more because it was kind of a primary platform of communication to be able to keep in touch with people and talk with people and understand what was going on and, you know, conversations in public and DMs and all of that. So to me, that's the thing. And that's what F the money, F the content creation stuff. To me, I don't want to lose the platform for that, honestly. care less about being verified and all that other nonsense. It's, I don't want to see this be run into the ground so that the platform is no longer viable and it literally goes away. That's my major concern. And this is, again, where it, I'm talking, you know, Elon's rush to do the things that he's done and basically be an a-hole online with the way that he's doing it. He's had zero public compassion for anything that's been happening. Mm-hmm. It look with the advertisers. I mean, advertisers are, I sent you that link privately where, you know, the advertisers in Adweek, they're talking about he has no plan. Like, what are you doing? So we're pulling back eight figure, you know, advertisement engagements away from Twitter because we don't know if we can trust what's going to happen moving forward. That's my major concern. You know, again, if you want to charge us, whatever, fine. Hey, we'll figure it out. You know, it's a choice. But if advertisers no longer want to support the platform and they go away, Twitter goes away. And that's the bummer out of all of this for me anyways.
Yeah. And you're right. 89% of the of money that's coming into Twitter is through advertisements. So without it, it can't survive, you know. So,
yeah.
Pete, what about you? There's anything positive you got from all this, from Twitter, from the beginning?
I mean, I said it earlier, right? It's and Paris said it also. It's the introduction to people that we ordinarily probably never would have met, right? People that lived at the time for us when you and I were living on the East Coast, people that lived on the West Coast, whether it be California, you know, we mentioned Ka earlier, you know, him being in Portland and stuff like that. Friends that we have in the industry that live either in the Midwest or on the East Coast, further up north from where we were in Florida at the time. But I think that's the biggest, for me, the biggest negative impact. I'm thankful for those introductions because now obviously I can, you know, I can reach out, I can call them, or I can text them, or I can hit them up on another social, you know, another social media platform. But that is the biggest thing for me, right? It's the introduction to people that I ordinarily would have never met, right? Just either A, because I'm socially awkward, I've got social anxiety, or just, you know, I didn't have access to anything like this, you know, back then. I think the thing that bothers me is you see some of the companies that Elon Musk is associated with, whether it be Boring or SpaceX or, you know, even going back to the early days when he first started and that startup became PayPal, an application that's used worldwide from a personal and business standpoint, right? And then you see how it's almost like watching a decline of somebody, right? How they've gone from, you know, extremely successful and then whether it be due to ego or pride or some other reason, just everything else goes downhill, right? You know, we saw what he's done with, you know, his work with, regardless of how you want to take it, his work with Tesla has disrupted the automotive industry. And I think what he might be trying to do with that same mentality is trying to disrupt social media, but it's having all the wrong impacts, right? He's trying to do it, but and perhaps in his mind, he's got a good idea. He's just implementing it completely wrong.
If I can interject on that, see, yes to what you're saying, but then also no in another way, in that he just did this interview. What was it, Friday? The sit down interview for you. He did basically talk. He was mostly talking about Tesla and SpaceX, but he touched on Twitter as well. And he basically opened up the interview talking about how he was like, remember, I tried to get out of the deal. This all started with him talking junk on social media, basically how I think I could do it better. And then he was being a meme lord, because I'm trying to not curse. He was basically just talking out loud on Twitter, so much so that it was almost like a publicity stunt. Oh, I'm going to buy it. Then he realized, oh, crap, I really do have to buy it. Twitter's not worth $44 billion. Overpaid for it, so much so that the Twitter leadership, they'd be fools to turn it down. Then he realized, ah, crap, I don't really want to do this, and kept trying to get out of it, realized he couldn't get out of it, and here we are. That's, to me, that's the concerning part about this, is why, when I say he doesn't really have a plan, I felt like he got backed into a corner and his ego is why we're here right now, versus he had a real plan to fix social media and had this visionary idea. Look, again, full disclosure, I own a Tesla, right? So I've looked at Elon Musk in the past and what he's, and I look at the, and you know, I'm a big NASA nerd, so I look at the things that he's doing with SpaceX and just the visionary plan, obviously Starlink, things like that. It's like he's had great ideas, or at least put people in position to implement great ideas that I feel are bettering this world, right? Yeah, no damn plan like that for Twitter. He did not. There's no freaking way you can tell me that, you know? So that's the concern when it comes to all that, that he didn't have a plan. His ego got in the way of himself.
Yep.
And here we are. Mm-hmm. So that's the concern. Like I said, I just hope the platform doesn't go away. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. One last thing for me. And a couple of things that happened because of Twitter. Pete, if you go way back, Community Vibes, it was 100% promotion through Twitter. And we had the community that came from all over across the country.
The world.
To be with us in Miami. Oh, the world. Yeah,
people
yeah.
from Japan.
From Japan that came because of Twitter. Wild to me, man. We even shut down our official message boards because everybody was active on Twitter. Yeah. And we were like, you know what? This will be a great platform for us to communicate with our community. Forget about message board. Let's go do that. One day at 3:30 in the morning, East Coast time, Phil Spencer tweeted out, I'm going to be on Gamertag Radio. My phone was going because of Twitter. My interview with Reggie, because of Twitter, I just tweeted out, man, I hope one day I can interview Reggie after 10 years, man, trying. And he said, yeah, let's do it. You know, there's a lot of things that we pulled off because of Twitter. And there was one to me was the most special one for me was seeing Paris coming out from the meeting room right after watching the presentation of Cyberpunk 2077, the first presentation ever. Cause that to me, one was like, yo, I remember talking to Pete, yo, let's make this short video. We post it on Twitter. I just want to record Paris' reaction just like that. Right. And Paris came out like, man, it was an awesome, you know, amazing presentation. And I posted that video online, and I know the stuff that was going on with Paris during that time, mm-hmm. that seeing him coming out happy and sharing that to the world, honestly, like that was like a very, very special moment for me, man, seeing that, man, and sharing it to everybody, you know? And I feel like right now we're in like just in a pretty bad bump, and I think eventually is gonna get fixed, and hopefully that's what I want, man. Because
yeah, hopefully
I still we could I want us to still continue sharing our opinions and sharing our good moments to the world. Like when I met Ree because of Twitter, we got married. I was posting that, showing that to everybody. Like look where I'm at right now, you know. Because we need to share the good to the world. You know what I'm saying? And it's like the best platform for me. Just stay communicating with everybody else, you know. So you were going to say something, Paris?
No, I was just going to say just one of my favorite moments from Twitter. Just, again, the power of Twitter and just the social engineering that happens through it. It's like I literally tweeted one day, I would love to be on New Rockstars. And I would love, you know, to talk about movies and all that stuff. And then that went viral. New Rockstars hits me up. I get in contact with Eric Voss and MT and Jessica and just everybody over there. And I've been on there a couple of times, and I literally have an open invitation to come back on again. Eric Voss was at the Kind of Funny studio opening, and we didn't get a chance to actually talk face to face. We wind up having the conversation on Twitter about how we miss each other and we got to get there soon and talk. It's like, that's what's awesome about the platform. You know, being able to do that kind of stuff, right? Being able to have that, those kind of engagements where it's good. It's not all the negative nonsense. It's just good fun. You know what I mean? Being able to get people together, you know, to do great things. So, again, I'll just say it again. I don't want it to go away. So I hope, you know, this is just early reactions, you know, change is always difficult. I get it, but I hope a steady hand does come in place over the next few weeks and months that guides this platform and gets everything righted so, you know, we can move forward.
Well, I have one quick question. And if we don't know, you don't know. Is there anything Elon can do now to fix / correct all the damage that has been done?
Stop talking.
Brand.
Yeah, stop talking. That's the number one thing.
Stop talking. That's what'll fix it. Stop talking. Seriously, just implement the changes that you want to implement, get community feedback on it, and go from there. Stop talking. That's his number one problem. He is a freaking Twitter troll. If he wasn't being a Twitter troll, I guarantee you there wouldn't be so much outrage right now. Guarantee you.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Because look, a lot of people that own other companies, they just stay quiet and just work behind the scenes. He should do the same exact thing, man.
Yeah.
Just stay quiet. He just loves attention. That's what it is. Yeah. Let's talk about God of War Ragnarok because this is going to be a long episode. That's why I want to make this short.
Well, it's your fault. I told you to talk about God of War at the top, but no, you don't talk about Twitter. Your fault, not mine.
You see, folks? He starts all the time.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, let's talk about our sponsor here at Gamertag Radio. Have you stopped to wonder why internet access is so much cheaper these days, like $30 to $40 a month? It's because internet service providers aren't just making off subscription fees. They're also making money from spying on your internet activity and selling your history data to big tech companies. So what's the best way to make sure that 100% of your data is encrypted and that your ISP can't get a hold of it? You guessed it, that's ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN creates a secure tunnel between all your devices and the internet so that everything you do online is encrypted. It reroutes your connection through a secure server. This blocks your ISP from seeing everything that you do online. All they can see is you're connected to ExpressVPN server, but nothing beyond that. And it's not just for your phone or computer. ExpressVPN works on all your devices. It works on your tablets, smart TVs, even your router, so your entire family can always stay protected. I can't stress this enough. ExpressVPN is so simple to use. You just open the app, tap one button to connect, and that's it. Your data is your business. Protect at expressvpn.com/GTR. Visit expressvpn.com/GTR to get 3 extra months of ExpressVPN protection for free. That's right. Go right now to expressvpn.com/GTR to learn more.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
We have this unreleased interview that I worked on during my previous job, and we have the composer of Starfield. Yes, I know a lot of people have been excited about that game. Yes, his name is Enon Zor. We recorded this interview and we talked a lot about his career, and also we went all in about Starfield. So check it out, and shout out to Emily Rose for being part of this interview. She did an amazing job. She's one of the producers at my previous job. And check it out. Let me know your thoughts. And this is a very, very long interview, so check it out. And we'll be right back after this.
Soundtracks and scores in video games help transport us from our couches and computers into the worlds we are exploring. And today at the studio, we not only have one of the greats, but he's also the composer for Bethesda's upcoming title, Starfield. Joining us is Emmy Award winner and 3-time BAFTA-nominated composer, Enon Zor. Enon, first of all, welcome back.
Well, first, I'm very honored to be here at the studios. Thank you, Emily, for having me.
Of course.
It was like really ages.
Dragon Ages ago, I believe, for Dragon Age 2.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for the hospitality. Of course. Very, very happy also to share all the stories with the fans.
Oh my gosh, we're so excited. Well, starting off, you have an illustrious work history of composing for film, television, and most notably video games. Out of these various mediums, what kept you coming back to video games?
Video games are so special when you look at them from the point of view of the pure composition. You gotta remember, when you're composing music for film or TV, you are locked to a picture. So the picture is dictating exactly, you know, what you need to compose. Again, you know, no harm in that, and we know that some of the best compositions for media were done for film. However, for me, I came from the classical world, mm-hmm. and the traditional world, and there's something so classical and traditional composing for a video game, because you're not really limited to any picture. So your composition has a start, has, you know, it's like an exposition, and then development, recapitulation, and even ending. So I'm like using terms here of like, but this is what it is. And for me, it's like the way it always has to be.
That's beautiful. I did not even know that there was this more classical with composing for video games. It was much more like composing for classical.
Well, it's about the approach. The mm-hmm. approach to composition is more about the overall emotions and feelings that you want to convey, rather than really hit everything on, you know, the nose. You know, mm-hmm. it really happens now, so we have to address it. No, the music in video games could last for a very long time when you're exploring. So more than anything else, you need to capture what's going on. You need to capture what the player should feel. And mm-hmm. many times, actually, we're sending some hints, you know, when we're composing, oh, something bad is going to happen or something, you know. So, or good. And again, it presents such a great opportunity and sort of like creativeness that I find in video games so compelling.
So, talking about kind of your classical background in gaming, which composers inspired you to pursue music and composing in general? I know, it's like, who are your heroes? Like, what's like, your favorite video game?
This is like, yeah, no, but you know what? It is a very important question, because when you are talking to a composer, you want to know where they came from. And I came from, again, a traditional world. You know, when I was 3 years old, or two or zero, my parents played for me Mozart and Beethoven and Brahms and Rachmaninoff and everybody. So I grew up really pretty much solely on classical music. Mm-hmm. Later on in my teens, of course, I turned to rock and everything. And then later on in my 20s, I went to jazz. And then like mid-20s, I started to know also music for media. So I sort of like covered all the bases, but the thing about in the composer's mind, mm-hmm. it's just not really going and leaving you. It stays there. So I could name you like the three big B's, Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, you know, but I also love the Russian composers, you know, like mm-hmm. Prokofiev, Stravinsky, Rachmaninoff, you know. Then you go to jazz, so you have Herbie Hancock and Keith Jarrett. And then, you know, you go to rock. Okay, so for me, you know, it's always like also B. I don't know what's with B's, you know, the Beatles.
Oh, yes, you know? Lots of B's.
You know, but also Queen and the Police and other, you know, that's, you know, for me. And we're talking really musical influence. Not only that I love listening to them, mm-hmm. but also something that I will, you know, I never copy.
No, everything's a remake. You're pulling inspiration from everywhere.
Exactly. You know, and then you go to media, and then you have John Williams, of course, and Jerry Goldsmith, mm-hmm. you know, and Thomas Newman, who I admire. You know, later on, Johan Johansson, I was so sorry he passed, but really, you know, big influence in some of the things. So, I mean...
No, but you paint a beautiful picture of, yeah, like, it's not just traditional composers. It's people across musical time.
Exactly. Plus, a composer usually listens to everything. Right now we talk, but in the background, I could hear a hum, okay? Mm-hmm. So this hum has a tone. Mm-hmm. And it could very much translate into something that is evolving. We all the time listen to stuff and somehow it being processed in our mind to something that later on could become music. We're just, our antennas are open all the time. And it's a lot about training also. And this is where the music comes from. You know, music is not just like being, we never really invent anything. Let's face it. It's all there. Okay. It was written before us. All right. But for us to take stuff that is in our mind and sort of like put it out in a way that, you know, emotionally we feel is the right way. This is pretty much composing for me.
And speaking of composing, you've been composing scores for video games like since, or even before 2000. I stayed here with Star Trek Klingon Academy. Over the last 20 years, we've seen huge advancements and evolutions in gaming. Yeah. How has composing for video games changed in those 20 years as well?
A lot and nothing. because music, always, since the beginning of time, is sort of like, first and foremost, it's a language where you can communicate with people without talking to them. When you play something to somebody, you actually goes to their feelings, okay? So this is what music has to be, and that's why music in media is so successful, because it speaks the language that you don't really need to say anything. Nobody really needs to understand. You don't need caption for music. Everybody understands. I would say that the big development of music first came from a technical point of view. Mm-hmm. I remember when we started, we barely had one stereo stream. So Klingon Academy was like, it plays, oh, it's looping. It didn't have like a good, you know, so, and I'm like playing the game, just, what happened?
It's restarted.
Exactly. Yeah. We're restarted. So that what we had, there was PS1, you mm-hmm. know, and things. Then came the PS2. I'm telling you, it's magic. Maybe I'm old, but I'm still
No, I'm right there with you. I'm 100% there with you.
You know, and it suddenly presented more opportunity. And with the PS2 also came the amazing audio capability that allowed me to record live audio, which was one of the main reasons why, to begin with, I was lured so much toward video games, because I've been told that you could record live orchestra. And for me, that basically what really bought me all together. And guess what? In Klingon Academy, which was my first game, I got to record a live orchestra. I recorded a Seattle Symphony, and I recorded live male choir for the Klingon.
Yes.
These kind of things. And I think that really from then on, you know, things just went up in such a big way. Now you could compose so many stems and partial things, you know, like small loops or even a note. And the AI engine will just take what you're doing and decide based on what you're doing to adapt the music. And that's why music today is so much more immersive and adaptive. So this is one way of how music really grew. We just don't really hear the music anymore. We feel the music because it's being adapted in the game and immersed in the game so well. The other thing is just trend, you know, and let's say that, I mean, you have trends in everything, in, you know, clothing and other things. So you have trends in music as well. And we are right there with film and TV. So whatever happens, we're influencing each other. So I wouldn't call it really how it developed. It's just changing.
It's constantly changing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And speaking of that, one of the surprises at the end of the Skyrim 10th anniversary concert in November of 2021 was the premiere of the Starfield Suite. You have created this beautifully haunting yet curious score that has me and so many others so excited for the game. Todd Howard has stated one of the first things we start with on a project is the music. What was the process like of building the Starfield score so early in the development process?
So in 2016, I got a strange phone call. says like, would you like to come over to our studios? We'd like to talk to you about something. It's like, well, when Todd calls.
Oh, yeah, you have to pick up the phone.
Exactly. You pick up the phone and you get the plane ticket and you go. And he told me, like, I'm thinking with Todd. He's always like, I'm thinking about, you know that it's already, he was thinking about it. I was like, I'm thinking about a space game. What do you think about it? It's like space. Come on. It's the final frontier. Mm-hmm. What do you want? You
Amen.
Know, I mean, I want space. Give me space. And he started telling me what will later become, you know, Starfield. Mm-hmm. There was no name. There was nothing. There was just a vision that was sort of like brewing in his mind for many years. And he finally got to realize his dream. And Todd, more than anything, and this is why I admire him so much, he's a dreamer. You know, more than anything else, he just knows how to actually bring his dreams to reality in many cases. But more, he's just a visionary. And I remember that I was flying back and like my mind is like all around. And I sat down and just started writing. I just from his stories or the ideas that he was conveying to me. And again, early 2016, that's 6 years ago, okay?
Jeez, yes.
I started writing music, and I was like, wow, that kind of cool. I shared it with Mark Lambert, who is the audio director for so many years, and my really close friend and collaborator. And Mark said, well, you know what? I think, why don't we share it with a team? Now, guess what? This really very same time, the artists actually started drawing. So they start playing the music, you know, in the studios, and they started sending me some concept art. So we were basically feeding each other. Nothing was set in stone. There was no gameplay. There was nothing, or very, very preliminary. But I think that this is the right way to build something. We're being conceived together. And the music that I wrote actually there without knowing anything ended up not only in prominent places in the game, but also in the concert.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful, beautiful suite. And we're going to talk a little bit more about it in just a few. But what has it been like jumping from composing fantasy landscapes like Dragon Age and distant dystopias like Fallout to now composing for a full-on galaxy of hundreds of planets? Are there any hurdles that have come with scoring a game with such a large scope?
You know, it's not about the scope. Music is always about emotion. So you just try to put yourself in the shoes of this person who gazes at stars and asks him or herself, what's out there? Where did I come from? I mean, when you just like in a starry night, I mean, these, you know, big questions, though kind of gullible, but yeah, they're, you know, comes to mind. What's up? Like, where did we come from? Where are we going? And, you know, Starfield actually is brave and courageous enough to try to answer some of these questions in a very original way. I think that it's more about the feel. Now, there are ways to tell a feel with music, right? Mm-hmm. And this is why we're doing what we're doing, okay? And I was thinking about the means then. All right, so this is my feeling, this vastness, this in one way total emptiness, but then inside there's so much opportunity. What can we write? So you take the lowest note on one hand, you take the highest note on the other hand, you play them together, and then in the middle, you just bring one solo human voice. You know, and this is basically how I started writing. You take a very, very low note, high note, and in the middle, human voice. And this is how the whole thing started. So it's a lot about how you translate the emotions into action and into real concrete idea or musical idea.
Now, there is another game you've been working on, not just alone. Can you share more about your collaboration with solo pianist Emily Bear on Siberia, The World Before?
This is kind of a very cool story.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew about Siberia, The World Before, I think the first time they started sharing with me was like late 2017. And I was captivated from the get-go. Because first, I love Siberia. I did the music for Siberia 2, which was just so evocative for me. And then Siberia 3. When they came with this idea, this also hit a very, very profound corner in my heart and soul. Because it talked about, you know, the Holocaust. My grandparents are Holocaust survivors. And we came from a place that knew so much about the horrors. And this is always such a dark and tragic place in my heart. So actually taking these emotions and bringing them out through music, that was the first thing that I was so excited about. And then came Emily. When I met her, she was, I mean, actually so funny. I met her in a synagogue and she was 17 years old. And Noreen Green, who is the big, you know, founder and conductor for the Jewish, LA Jewish Symphony Orchestra, she told me like she's an amazing pianist and stuff. And for me, it was like, wow, wait a second. Siberia, The World Before is all about this Jewish, very young pianist who is trying to make her career, but then, you know, getting into this horrible World War II as Jewish young pianist. So, Emily, such a great coincidence. And I told her, listen, I might have an opportunity for us, but you will have to wait 2.5 years. And she said, okay.
Yes, like, great.
Great. You know, I'll be exactly. Well, guess what? 2.5 years later, I called her. She was so excited about it. And I felt when she received the music, it's almost like she knew this music before. I don't know how to explain it. But when she was playing the music, it almost like really flew from her. But then I understood that when I wrote this music, I actually, she all the time was in my mind. And I wrote it for her. I wrote it really imagining that she's going to play it. So, yeah, that's what happened. And in this first moment, listen, 19 years old when we went first to Budapest, you're sitting in a strange city, in a strange studio with like big orchestra, not the best, you know, sort of like surrounding for you to shine.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this young woman just really flew into this thing and made it her own. I was astonished, like how much confident, you know, and the creativity. She really brought so much power to the score of Siberia, and I really feel that we are all fortunate to have her, you know, on the score.
And if you're interested in hearing that collaboration live, you can catch both Anand Zur and Emily Bear at Siberia, The World Before, and other works by Anand Zur concert this November in Los Angeles. Now, we like to wrap up every interview with a fun series of rapid questions. So feel free to be as quick as you'd like with these answers. But if you feel like elaborating, feel free to. Are you ready?
Always.
All right. This one's, I'm so sorry for this first one. Favorite video game of all time?
I will go actually with Klingon Academy because I played so much of it, you know, in the old time that I just fell in love with it.
All right. Favorite instrument to write into a score?
I'd say either cello or piano.
Okay. Least favorite instrument to write into a score?
Kazoo.
Quick follow-up questions. How many times have you had to use the kazoo?
Never.
Good.
And this is the reason.
We'll keep it that way. which could you take in a fight? Deathclaws or a dragon?
Israeli Merkava tank.
I can see that. And if you had to pick one Fallout setting to live in, which would it be? Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas, Fallout 4, or Fallout 76?
I pick up Vegas.
Oh, same. Right there. Yes. And finally, will you be visiting all 1,000 planets in Starfield?
Definitely.
Same. I'll be right there beside you.
Yep, I'll wait for you.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Anand Sir, for joining us at the studio to chat. And we're looking forward to hearing more of your beautiful and incredible work in Starfield. And as we stated earlier, on November 20th, you can catch Anand Sir performing the Starfield Suite, the Fallout Medley, and more alongside Emily Bear in the world premiere of the Suite from Siberia, The World Before, and other works by Anand Sir concert in Los Angeles. You do not want to miss it. Thank you so much.
Of course.
That was such a joy. Yeah.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
First of all, I just want to say thank you to the whole PlayStation team for giving us the opportunity to review God of War Ragnarok, biggest game of this year. Paris, there's other games too, but it's up there. What are you hating anyway? Jesus Christ.
Well, I'm the one to say it was a game of the year for 2022, so whatever.
I won't go, well, whatever. We're going to have different opinions, but I'm enjoying the game. The game is phenomenal. I'm almost towards the end. I'm not 100% complete, but I feel like story-wise, game design, music, voice acting, still top-notch. I just feel like this is a better package, in my opinion. I love the first one. First one is one of the best games I played on the PlayStation 4. With this one, I think it's a better game, a way better game. Controls is a lot better too, and I just love the relationship between father son. I actually thought about Paris and Pete when I was playing the game. You know, I don't have a kid or anything, but
I can't wait until you do. Oh, that's gonna be such a great day. I'm just gonna laugh and laugh and laugh. I can't wait. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, because I know people are gonna be asking, like, so do you hear the word "hey boy" like in the previous game? You don't. I thought it was gonna be weird at first, and I got used to it. I'm like, no, it's a different time between them two. No spoilers, but I really really enjoy this game. The introduction is so freaking dope, so dope. Now the only issue that I have. This is the only negative issue is the God of War recap that you could also watch that video in the game. I feel like it's too rushed and too short. And if there's somebody that never played the series and this is going to be like their first time playing it because of the reviews and the buzz and everything, it's very confusing. It's too short. It doesn't explain much in there. But besides that, I truly, truly enjoy this game. This game is so, so, so good. And it's getting great feedback, great reviews across board from everywhere, man. So that's awesome to see, man. Really, really good to see. Paris, I know you have the game. Your thoughts? I know you said is your game of the year so far. We might disagree, but we could talk about that later. But go ahead.
I love how he throws that in. I don't care what your opinion is on this. I'm giving mine. How about that? I didn't say a word while you're giving yours. I'm kidding. No, I do think this is my favorite game of 2022, without a doubt. And if, you know, I had a vote and I was predicting my game of the year, I would say it's God of War Ragnarok. So much. And for me, it's more personal because the story that was started in 2018 and has now continued here into Ragnarok in 2022 about a father and a son. I mean, having a son who's similar to Atreus's age at this point in Ragnarok, it resonated with me a lot. And it's why I even on Twitter gave kudos to the writing team over at Sony Santa Monica, because they just absolutely nailed that dynamic, because both of them are growing and learning each other. And let me preface this by saying, to your point, don't watch the recap thing in Ragnarok for God of War 2018. Go play God of War 2018 if you have not, because this is a natural extension of that story, and it continues that relationship from there. And that's why it's so good, because both father and son are continuing to grow and curate their personal relationship. And then when you extend that out into what's happening, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but just what's happening, obviously you've seen the early stuff with Odin and Thor and all that, and just the whole Norse mythology that they've brought in into this franchise, and just where that story is heading. I mean, it's literally Ragnarok. If you understand what Ragnarok is, then you get the whole point of what's happening here in the story. So the story is phenomenal. The gameplay, you know, is a continuation from what we had in 2018 with some tweaks. You know, the weapons, like, you know, the axe and everything, and just upgrading in the shield and all that. The side quest stuff in this is phenomenal. I would argue, and Gene Park, even from Washington Post, even said this as well. I could argue this is some of the best side quest stuff we've had since The Witcher 3. It really is. It's yep. That good. I will just say there is one side quest you can do with a whale that is heartbreaking. That is the most I'll spoil on anything. But that's the thing about this story with God of War Ragnarok. It hits on so many emotional beats. And again, as a father, if you ain't crying by the time you finish this game, your heart is just ice cold. I don't know any other way to say it, but they really get you as a father, and that father son dynamic. It's special. It really is. And this is why, you know, we've been joking around earlier, but this is why I say it's my favorite game of 2022, because it hit me on a personal level, and that goes a long way. Your mileage may vary, and I get that. You know, what you consider your favorite game is very subjective, and there's nothing wrong either way. But for me, it's my favorite game of 2022 because of that story. The combat, the puzzle elements of it are good enough to carry me through to the end, to where, you know, I had a very enjoyable time. I love, like, it's funny because some people will probably ding it for this, but the reuse of assets and the reuse of locations, while you, oh, why is this just an expansion or DLC? It's no. This is its own game, but it's that familiarity of returning to places that you've already been that I think enhances it even more as being a sequel. You're right. It's very hard to talk about this game without spoiling it, because I think part of what makes it so great is the actual story. But it's really good, and I highly recommend, make sure you play 2018 before you play this, because that's part of this journey. It's almost, for lack of a better term, it's almost when you look at Marvel movies, right? The MCU, where everything is connected and you have callbacks to things from previous movies or whatever, that enhances, like Endgame, all the callbacks that you had from all the years of the MCU and Endgame. That's what made Endgame so special. And the callbacks to 2018 and even the old God of War games is what makes Ragnarok special. Play it. Don't let anyone spoil this for you. You want to enjoy the story for what it is on your own terms. And obviously we know right now, social media, you know, there's leaks and everything everywhere. So be very careful with that. Mute all the words that you can, but enjoy the story for what it is, because it's special. It's good. Again, I cannot give kudos enough to that writing team over at Sony Santa Monica for what they were able to create with this. And, you know, we know Alana Pierce is a part of that. So just everyone, you know, that were able to bring Ragnarok to life from a story standpoint. It's phenomenal. And you, to your point, Danny, that you brought up, the voice acting in it is phenomenal. And I love that Atreus, it's the same voice actor, but that's the whole point. He's grown up. So now he has that teenage voice from what he had in 2018. And it makes sense. And this is what I'm telling you. It hits you in the feels so much so that, and if anyone's paid attention to my social media, I've pulled up like old pictures of myself and Danny and Pete and throughout the years. And the reason I were able to find those pictures is I was going back looking at pictures of my kids throughout the past 10, 15 years or so, right? And just watching them grow up. It's crazy. And that's what this game is. I'll leave it at that. It's great. It may not be your favorite game of the year, but I will be shocked if it's not one of your top games of the year if you play this and experience it. It's that good. So again, just kudos Sony Santa Monica. They did a phenomenal job with this. And like I said, for me on a personal level, it is my game of the year. It is my favorite game of 2022.
Yeah, and I also want to add too is that if you don't have a PlayStation 5, play this on a PlayStation 4. Like I still think you're still gonna have that same experience, you know, just because it doesn't look like the PlayStation 5 version. You're still gonna have an awesome experience playing this overall, man. So make sure to just get this game. Doesn't matter which version it is. Pete, before we wrap it up, you have any questions for me or Paris about the game?
I mean, I will play it eventually, right? I mean, I sit on the hill of I'm not buying a PlayStation 5. For my own personal reasons. It's moments like these where, yes, I do have FOMO for day one launches, but I'm patient enough that I can play it eventually when it comes to PC. I think my only question would be, do you need to have played 2018 to play this?
You don't need to, but you should. That's the best way I can answer it. I mean, you can play this as a standalone, but there's going to be certain moments
callbacks that and stuff,
aren't going to make as much sense as they should if you've not experienced that story. And to Danny's point, like I didn't even watch the damn recap because I didn't need to, but I can't imagine that recap filling in the blanks enough for you to get the experience and the impact of what 2018 was.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason why I watch it because it's been a while and I forgot certain things. I was like, oh, let me see what they have in here. And I feel like it was so short. And I was also thinking, you know, someone that I've never played the first one and this is going to be their first time playing it, you know, that type of thing. What's up?
No, I to the point, this isn't, I'm not spoiling anything. And there's obviously the preview stuff that's out already. But the way the way Ragnarok opens, a certain person is very mad at you. And it ain't going to make sense to you if you've not played 2018, why this person is so mad.
Yeah.
This is why I'm saying you definitely want to play it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make sure to check it out. And this is a must have in my opinion. And anything else, Pete?
No, I think that's it. I mean, I do have FOMO for moments like this. This is the thing that tests my patience or determines whether I need to start filling up the space back here under my TV.
Yeah, yeah. And if you have the Steam Deck or PC, I know it came out earlier this year, God of War, just go and play that one too, man. The game is amazing. The first one is amazing. It's a classic. Classic game. Anything else, guys, before we wrap it up? Everything good?
No, we're good.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to episode 1231 here at GamerTagRadio.com. Make sure to find us on any podcast app. Just search for Gamertag Radio. Follow, subscribe, post your review. It will help us to climb to the top of the charts, and other people will discover us because of your support. So make sure to do that. Also, if you'd like to be part of our family discussion, you have feedback, questions, here's how you could contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Gamer Tech Radio, episode 1231. Until next time, thanks to Pete and Paris for joining me this week. We're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamer Tech Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.